Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Otherwise, I have to wait till like 7 o'clock tonight.
If you're interested in some really good glassware that's cheap, but it's an antique, some of those bottles up there are dated before the Civil War. And over there, I used to have in that empty space, I used to have some of the prettiest Shirley Temple bottles I've ever seen.
Help! Help! It's happening!
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Film Sack, episode 397, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined this week by Brian. He stole the Snickers for the Nougat Dunaway.
Did it all for the Nougat. The Nougat. Oh, hi. What's that? Do I have a scary story to tell around the campfire after a long day of being clueless college students on a rampage of ignorance, sexual desires, and general tomfoolery? All the name of Nougat? Why, yes. Yes, I do. Here then, let me tell you a tale about the one time I heard a weird and unsettling story about my local bowling alley. Or as I like to call it, every story I have ever heard about my local bowling alley. But first, look, everyone, the director of our movie has decided to inject himself directly into the movie and play the part of Marijuana Jesus. See how he brings enough pot to feed the 5,000? Dude, I'm totally going to be Smokey the Clown. Anywho, does anybody else feel like they have the cooties? Because my crotch is feeling much more cootie than usual. Say, can you guys check me for crotch cooties? I'm sure they're fine to touch. No, go ahead. Touch my cooties. Now you have the crotch cooties as well. Hey, let's go wash them off down by the stream. Crotch moded.
Yes. I have so many questions.
So much crotch.
A lot of crotch. Yes. A lot of crotch. Also, in addition to the crotch, Randy Ballpeen Hammer Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Did I ever tell you boys about the time I was a sheriff's deputy out in a patch of woods somewhere in North Carolina?
No.
Sorry?
No.
You would not believe how much of nothing we had out there. But what we did have was college students from Tennessee trying to spend their whole spring break in rental cabins, which is big business out here, even though there's only one cabin, and for some reason spring break takes place in the fall with all them leaves on the ground. And I don't have to tell you, y'all know how much groups of horned up college students just love to isolate themselves. Everybody knows that. What was I saying? Anyway, I was a teenage sheriff's deputy with a sad mustache and a uniform that looked like it was straight out of one of them costume stores that open up every October in that building that used to be the Sears back when there was such a thing as Sears. Y'all remember Sears, right? That used to be a store. Happy Halloween, fellas.
Right. How timely.
I hate that sheriff so bad, or that deputy, or whatever he was.
Hate the party guy. Hey, party guy.
I freaking hated him. But I'll tell you who I like. It's Brian, always coughing blood on a beetle ibbot.
Ooh. I know that beetle is like now possessed.
Yep. It's not
okay,
good.
I want to thank you for coming in today to do some voiceover work for Cabin Fever. The movie has 238 uses of the F-bomb, and we need to make a version that can be shown on syndicated daytime television, and that's where you come in. You've got the script right there in front of you, but I'm going to go ahead and do some setup for you so you can capture the feeling of each line, okay? Great. All right, in this first one, you're a hapless moron who just wants to go out in the woods and shoot squirrels. Your friend asks why you want to go kill squirrels, and the original line is that they're effing gay. So go ahead and read your line and really sell it. I'll lead you in. Why would you want to kill squirrels?
To help control the ever-growing squirrel population, did you know that 37% of wild squirrels can transmit diseases like rabies and leptospirosis?
Great. All right, even though you screwed that line up, you go ahead and keep going. All right, great job. In this next one, you're Jeff, the pretty boy who is deciding to take all the beer and leave his friends behind. The original line is, I don't want any of us getting sick, but you two effing effers insist on touching her. Now she's bleeding all over you guys, so you two can effing rot, but not me. No effing way, not me. Go ahead and read your line.
I don't want any of us getting sick, but the two of you don't have a medical background, nor are these ample conditions for sterile transport of her body. So I'm going to use this alcohol to sterilize some instruments so that we can treat her wounds until the paramedics arrive.
Great. Okay, finally, we have a line from Marcy, who has just watched a few of her friends die and says, it's like being on a plane when you know it's going to crash. Everyone around you is effing screaming, yelling, we're going down, we're going down. And all you really want to do is grab the person next to you and F the S out of them because you know you're going to be effing dead soon anyway. Go ahead and read the new line, please.
Hi, Paul. I know that we really haven't expressed any interest whatsoever with each other until now, but I'm contractually obligated to perform two sex scenes in this film, and since the other guys are both dead and gone, and the producers didn't pay me extra for a lesbian scene, I guess it's you and me.
Mm. I'm glad you translated all this for us. It was delicious.
Yeah, because I was, it was like, talking jive in airplane. I couldn't really understand what these people were talking about, but now I feel like I have a clearer understanding.
Now you understand it, yes.
Of the movie Cabin Fever, everyone. Cabin Fever, that's right, 2002, not the 2016 remake, which makes no sense to me, but the 2002 Eli Roth, written by, directed by Eli Roth with his buddy Randy Perlstein.
Starred Eli Roth.
Yeah, Eli Roth making a cameo appearance in it. It's our second sighting of Eli Roth. The first was Piranha 3D, where he got his head mashed against a thing.
Right.
I don't think we've done anything else with Eli Roth in it that I know of. He's most notable currently as the director of the kid-friendly PG-13 film, There Are Clocks Inside the Wall, or whatever that's called.
Which I had a fun time with.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Really? There's a ticking clock?
There's a clock. There's
the house. The house with the clock in the wall.
That's what it is. It's based on some kid's book.
Jack Black.
Popular kid's book. Jack Black. What's her lady in it?
That's the current. I didn't realize that new thing is an Eli Roth deal.
It blows my mind that's his, because I think he's a terrible director. Now, we'll get to that. We'll get to all of that. We'll talk about whether I'm wrong or right about the idea that Eli Roth's a bad director or not. but I had never seen Cabin Fever.
We do need to get into that. Go ahead.
Yeah, we will. I mean, I thought I'd seen it, and here's why I thought I'd seen it. I didn't think I'd seen it going in, but as soon as it started playing, I went, oh, I think I've seen this. But by the end, I realized, no, I hadn't seen this. It's just that every possible dumb horror trope that he enjoyed growing up in the 80s is jammed in here. And it felt like I'd seen it before, but I hadn't seen it. So I went in excited because Dunaway's been selling this thing like, oh, yeah, it's great slasher thing and the deal and whatnot. And I went in and I went, oh, right, Eli Roth. I did see Hostel. I think he's bad at this. And I still think he's bad at this. Go ahead, Randy.
Also, it's Halloween season, and you have different expectations and like a different threshold for good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, it's probably bad that I'm watching The Haunting of Hill House right now on Netflix, which is really good.
Oh, yes.
Fan-freaking-tastic.
That's the problem. This movie I thought was great for film sack.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. You may have confused greatness for great movie. No, I meant greatness for film sack.
Yeah, and it is, and you're not wrong about that. And I guess what I was hoping for was something, I don't know, better than this. This is just so, like, the acting's terrible, like, terrible bad through the whole thing, and the plot twists, if you want to call them that, feel like they were made on the fly. Like they just right. made decisions as they went. And the only thing that's kind of unsettling about it, in my mind, is the way it ends is a little unsettling. And like,
I think if in your first viewing, I think you're right. And that's what my first viewing of, I felt like when I watched it the first time, I kind of felt the same way you did. I think if you twist the movie just a little bit and realize that Bert is the hero of the movie, I think you get a little different perspective.
What? If wait, Bert is the hero?
If you stop riding along with the Rider Strong Paul character,
yeah.
who is supposed to be, you know, the hero of the movie, and you really switch your mind and realize that Bert is the actual hero of the movie, I think you'll enjoy it a little better.
Wow. Okay, so, wow.
I think that if you're a 14-year-old boy and you really just haven't consumed a lot, this movie, especially with its twist ending, is perfectly fine. The problem is there's nothing new here. There's absolutely zero thing that isn't a well-worn trope. But again, if you haven't already read the every Stephen King book or whatever, you know, like, I guess it could be surprising.
I don't know. I mean, it's the absolute teens in the woods, just without an actual slasher. They actually are the slashers, but it is the pick them off one by one through a series of them being stupid and their own hubris, their own, you know,
right,
you know, belief that they're invulnerable. They end up causing all these problems, and it's absolutely every single teenager's in the forest trope.
Yeah,
right. But he does do a twist. There is a bit of a twist. The bit of the twist is you eventually realize
teenagers.
Well, right. The twist eventually is that yes, the teenagers are the terror. There was no terror that existed that wasn't natural.
Well,
until
so
they came along and
those
destroyed
of us were parents. Of like teenagers turning into adults,
right.
We kind of already knew that the teenagers were the real problem. We knew that
they're monsters.
Well, that keep in mind that these are supposed to be college kids, and they play 16. Like they're older. I mean, I don't mean they look 16. I mean maturity wise, they're playing younger.
Absolutely,
and
they're like high school students.
Yeah,
right. Absolutely. Porky's bodies, but what's
Porky's
the
body? I love
Porky's
it.
Bodies. Like what's the American Pie bodies and Porky's minds or
something like that?
There's
something like
some
that.
Sort of yeah.
But here's the thing is the okay. I want to address this. It's good you brought this up because I thought about it during it as well. How did I feel about the idea of it coming from within and the teenagers themselves becoming the horrors? And not some slasher dude, you know, where's our Jason, where's our Freddy sort of thing.
Scott, I'm curious, at the beginning when you first see the first guy who's got blood on it, keeps falling into a little crack, did you actually think, oh, this is a Wendigo movie? Like there's a Wendigo in these woods?
I kind of did, yeah. Like that's what I hoped. I'd hope there was something more like that. I wanted, because I did, if I'm disappointed at all, it's that in a horror movie like this where it's teenagers in the woods, I need a really terrible evil to get behind, and I didn't find one here. Like all I got here was just, oh no, I got the scabies, and now we all have it. And
the scabies.
But it's such a weird and uncharacteristic switch, and it happens so quickly for Paul, where he's like, oh my god, I've got to help my friends, and oh, you know, I need to get out of these woods or get to a hospital, and he comes across who I love the affectionately called Marijuana Jesus. I say that stays. throughout the rest of this episode.
That's pretty good.
Comes across him and all the other kids smoking pot and clubs poor Winston over the head with a baseball bat, really for no real reason other than Winston forgot to call a tow truck.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Poor old Winston.
Oh, yeah. I really have a lot of sad feelings for Winston. But they basically wanted to make a combo zombie and slasher movie. And the zombie part just didn't work for me. Like, they're just sick. No. They're just bleeding out all their holes. Like, just let them die. Like it's to me, that's not enough of an impetus for a bunch of killings. And the slow killing.
That's the reason, right? That's the reason why I realized that Paul's the real monster. Because there's really only because of his fear does it escalate to this height. Only because of his ignorance does it escalate to this point. Because a reasonable person, Bert, is like, stay away from me. Let's isolate them. Stay away. I've got to fix the car. I've got to save all you dummies. Let's get out of here. Degree,
but Bert is also, number one, he just likes going out and shooting squirrels for the fun of it and can't control a rifle shot in the air. But also, he's kind of the complete opposite direction of, oh my God, our friend who we drove up here with and we're hanging out for a whole week is sick. Let's just completely shut the door on her and not give her a blanket, not give her any water, not give her anything. You got to have some little bit of compassion if you're going to be the voice of reason. And
the script conveniently busts up their one vehicle, right? A little, just enough so that they can't, or at various times they also can't escape because the truck has just been stolen or whatever.
I call it the spew truck because no one really spews in the first half of the movie unless it's in that truck.
Right.
But it's like he's trying really hard, and this is just all like Roth's brain. He's trying really hard to not have a trope where the truck just breaks down right after they get there and they're stuck. Mm. And instead, he comes up with like four or five tropes to replace it. Where, you know,
right?
Where it's never working and clean and available for them to just get in and drive to a hospital when they need it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked it.
I just wish that there would have been something more sinister at play. And they didn't go all in. If you're going to have, really weird, mysterious, and deviant locals, like, go all the way. It's another trope, but you didn't really go all the way. Like, you just had a lady beating a diseased goat or whatever the hell that was hanging there.
Right, yeah, right.
And which then you're like, oh, about, she's bad.
It's about what you've seen and haven't seen. We all watch the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so we know what weird locals are supposed to look and feel like.
Right.
And if you haven't seen it, like, you know what I mean? Like, you might look at this movie and be creeped out, but the rest of us are just all, eh.
Yeah, this is creepy locals light. It's not the same as those Chainsaw Massacre people. They're the poster children of what I'm talking about, and they're great at it. So if you're going to steal that trope, like, go all the way, man.
But that was the idea, right? It was, once again, and maybe it was just a failed idea overall, because how do you convince us that the teenagers are the bad guys unless you flirt with the idea that the oddball hillbilly locals are actually not bad? They're just, you know, maybe a little misunderstood. Maybe Dennis is, you know, you shouldn't sit next to Dennis.
They're all struggling with being slowly picked off by the same disease.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know how you could go full on and still convince me that Paul is the bad guy.
That's what we're getting at. This movie has like the kernel of something really good, but it comes from a small-minded place and it stays small.
Yeah.
You know, the whole cast is like barely competent, you know, all those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to argue again that James DeBello, who plays Bert, is fantastic.
You really like Bert.
Really selling Bert.
Yeah.
Bert, he was fantastic. He's the star of the show.
Yeah, whatever.
There's just so many points where you've got a plot point that you know they wanted to really get to, like get to this point, get to that point, and they didn't put as much thought into how you get to that point as they do the point itself.
Yeah.
Like the guy shows up. All right, we need the car to somehow be broken down. We talked about that a minute ago. I know the bloody guy will get in there and they'll just beat the crap out of the car. Don't worry. Nobody will notice because they'll be focused on the guy spewing blood all over the inside of the car. But, you know, having somebody shoot out the engine, no problem. Totally makes sense when there's a bloody guy inside the car who's revving it. That's what you'd want to do.
There's a bloody guy in your car revving it. Yeah. It's just such a weird thing out of context to say, but yeah,
let's put this movie slap dab in the middle of where it was at in our minds at the time. This was filmed, or at least was in pre-production, during the September 11th attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So,
yeah, but I am not about to give Eli Roth any kind of high-minded credit.
I'm not giving him any credit. I'm just saying that it was a different time. There were different times. That doesn't excuse some of the BS they did, but we were both, you know, waking up and still asleep all at the same time.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is he doesn't care. He's just making schlock, yeah. Man. Like, this is just schlocky stuff. And you know, good on him. He just made a big successful kids movie. Like,
right.
It's not like I can't, you know, I mean, get there how you get there. I
don't think he's a bad director. I just think he was very young during this movie.
Okay. I'll give you that.
An experience. By the way, we never really covered it, but first time seeing it for everybody or?
Yes, no. For me, yeah.
Oh, no.
Dunaway
I had to
it.
Go see this in the theater when it came out. I was taking my dearly departed friend, Dirk Kadyke. Dirk was really, really into movies like this, like anything he could call alternative. And so, like, this is the guy that dragged me to see Blair Witch Project a couple years before Cabin Fever. Mm-hmm. And, oh, God, that movie was so bad, guys. Anyway, I remember Dirk made me go see Cabin Fever with him because he was so excited about it. We had to go to the Indie Theater in the Arboretum in Austin, where, you know, the only theater in town that would be showing this little piece of crap. And as soon as it started, I was teleported back in time to a time when we used the word gay as a pejorative or used the word at all. Like, in the last 5 years, you just stop hearing that word altogether. And, like, as soon as this movie starts and they start throwing the word gay around, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, we did talk like that.
Yeah, but also stupidly. Like, why are you shooting the squirrels? Because they're gay.
Right. But was it intentional on Eli Roth's part? Because I really felt like he was wanting us to feel uncomfortable with the language. So was he that backwards thinking and it was just flowing from the pen?
He'd have to say. He'd have to tell you, but I think that's just how he is. I think he just thinks that way. I think he's one of those guys that's like just all gonzo on it going, yeah, man, like, hey, they're teenagers. If you're talking about shooting a squirrel, you'd probably say they were gay, right? That's funny.
Right.
Like,
well, the part of the formula about horror movies, especially slasher movies, is part of it is that we have to believe that the sins of the teenagers are the reason why they're being punished, right? So, I mean, for them to be, you know, debaucherous and just, you know, only concerned about themselves and very self-centered and egotistical, I think that plays through pretty well here. I think they all are trash that we expect. And you,
but I want to like someone. I hate everybody so bad.
How can you not like Bert? I mean, okay, sure, he's the goofball.
All right, let's go. Let's go.
Let's answer that question. Bert sucks. He's horrible.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Bert's sticking his face in the window while your friends are having sex.
That's just funny.
Bert's the guy you could have left home because he doesn't have a girlfriend. You didn't even need to bring him. Like,
right. But he brought the smokes. He's not sharing them, but he brought them.
He brought the smokes. Yeah. He brought the weed. You're right. He did bring the weed.
And he had a Game Boy Advance. I think Bert was playing. I think he was playing a role in his friends. You know, he plays that
role.
He's
a trope. He's that fifth wheel guy. Right. He's the one you always have around. You don't really know why you're doing it. Like, I get why they're doing it, but he's not the hero of anything. He's the biggest.
No, not at all.
He's a puss.
I mean, and he's a trope. He is probably the most obvious trope that you see in the film. Like, as soon as he starts talking, like, oh, that's the dumb jock. None of the girls want to be with that guy, and he's going to be making the pratfalls and the funny faces. He's in that character is in so many teen movies, right?
Yeah.
The dumb jock.
Mm-hmm.
And you really cement it by giving him a freaking monologue where he's laying on a couch talking about some personal sexual experience he's had.
That was terrible.
It's so terrible that you can't imagine that it's anything other than that trope. Like, it's not, there's no attempt here to escape that for him.
Yeah, that story on the couch about his masturbation story made me want to die.
Right. Oh, that was the thing that grossed you out?
It did.
That the thing? Because I'll tell you what grossed me out. Can we get to that?
Yeah, if you want.
Oh, there's so much. Yeah,
there's a lot, but go ahead.
The Foley work Paul and...
That is not what foreplay should sound like.
It is absolutely not.
You're trying to fish a lima bean out of the bottom of a snack pack pudding.
Yeah.
And also, that's a really good description right there. I was going to say, sticking your fingers in and stirring a can of chunky soup.
Oh, jeez.
That too. Yeah.
The The thing that really grossed me out about that little sequence was the music.
Yeah.
Because it was like, mm-hmm. it was like the cheapest imaginable scoring where the composer, in air quotes, was asked to make it sound sexy. And it wasn't at all.
No, it was beyond that. Yeah, there were a number of things that kind of grossed me out. I think the grossest thing for me was actually anytime the sickest among them would cough. There was a really horrible cough effect. I don't know how they were achieving that, but that wet, bloody cough sound, which I captured and we'll play later, is the grossest thing for me.
Plays on a horror trick in horror movies, which is to make us all just groan and go, "Oh, come on." That's what horror movies, if you're not going, "Oh, come on," at the characters in a horror movie, they're not doing it right. And so every time they would cough or spew, they would aim it and projectile it just right into someone else's face. And you're like, "Oh, come on."
I agree with that. But the problem is we've seen such better examples of it recently. Like when we watched Piranha 3D, there were so many "Oh, come on" moments. And you throw your popcorn at the screen.
Yeah.
And this movie just doesn't ever rise to that level for me. It just doesn't have the chops.
Right. I agree. I'm totally with Randy on this. What do we call that one? Jordanson? Is that our combo?
Yeah, Jordanson. That's it.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. I'm on team Jordanson.
Deluxon.
Yeah, something like that. But a Listerine penis. That was a scene to remember.
Sure. Oh, like you wouldn't be in there burning your penis off.
Did you actually write that down, Scott?
I wrote I wrote down the two word phrase Listerine penis right here.
All right.
And I didn't put any other notes with it because I knew that would be enough to sort of focus us. But here's the thing with that. You say, wouldn't you? But I wouldn't have been with her in the first place. She is the most damaged goods character in here. I can't stand her. I can't stand that type of character in horror movies. And why is, like, you're down to like the worst viral outbreak ever and you can't get anywhere or do anything. She's clearly got it. And you're like, your first thought is let's go do it because reasons. Like, come on.
It's so shoehorned in there. The trivia says that there were a lot of scenes that were cut from the film that kind of leads the budding attraction between those two characters. I don't care how attracted you are. Like, all right, we've got blonde Emily or whatever her name is decaying in the shed.
Yeah.
We've got, I think at this point, Jeff had already left with the beer. Was Bert dead in the living room at
Bert
this point
was
too?
Bert was dead.
No, Bert was not dead. They would not have done it if Bert was dead.
Oh, you're right. Bert died a little later from that guy with the long hair. Got him.
From the gunshot.
Yeah.
But yeah, not really feeling any sexy. Sorry, I don't think I'm going to be able to perform.
Isn't that a huge horror trope? I mean, if you've watched all the Friday the 13th, so everybody's always having sex.
But they're doing it before they know anything's wrong.
Not true. It happens a good bit where you'll see people having sex even after death because it's such a life-death turn-on, I suppose, is supposed to be the idea. Even though it's foolish and not real.
Yeah,
I feel like Jeff has gone into the woods. I'm not going to use Jeff because it's confusing with this film. Let's say Bob has gone into the woods. He's gotten killed by Jason Voorhees. And I don't know where Bob is. I know. Let's have sex, while we wait for him to come back.
Right.
It's usually that. Like, maybe there's a little bit wrong, but there's not like three bodies strewn about the house and bed's clean.
There's no bodies in the house. The only body is outside in the shed. Everybody else is
which is enough for me to go. Girlfriend is rotting in the shed.
Exactly. It's the girl that he's been attracted to forever. And,
which shows you just what a evil beast the Paul character is. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's this woe is me, I've been friend zoned.
Yeah,
screw
that guy.
Your tactic for making us root for Bert is to just push everybody else down.
Yeah. And say, everyone else sucks worse than Bert. Oh, you know what? I'll give you that. Everyone sucks worse than Bert. Okay. I'm there. Yeah. I'm there with you. Yeah. That's fine. Because Bert really sucks. It's a low bar. But they're all
I think whenever I realized that I was actually pulling for Bert's plan at some point, I was like, this movie has really taken a turn because I am now identifying with Bert going, you tell him, Bert.
So
let's get out of here.
There's one thing I noticed about this is I was digging through it and watching it, looking at all her profiles and stuff. There's a common thread here. A lot of these people all worked together on that Detroit Rock City movie in 99. That includes Bert, the naked girl and someone else.
Naked girl, that's her.
What's her name? I forgot. Carla Sienna.
Marcy? Oh, yeah.
Serena Vincent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the actress, yeah. They were yeah, that's right. These are real people and do this for a living. They were all in Detroit Rock City, which is that movie where all the kids hop in a car and drive to find Kiss.
To see a Kiss concert.
Yeah, to see a Kiss concert or whatever. And Bert is this long-haired dude in that thing, and I remember him being quite good in that. I think in this, he's just, I don't know, this just feels like low-budget, like Eli Roth funded it with, you know, coupons to McDonald's or something. And
yeah, I mean, of course.
And that's fine. Yeah. This is his big break, right? Hostel came later, didn't it? Or was it first?
Yeah, it did. It did.
Okay. Definitely, yeah. He's an introducing director credit here. He is... always, there's a story that Howard Stern always tells. When Eli Roth was wanting to make this movie, he was going around asking people for money to be producer on it.
Mm.
And like Howard Stern was like, this was like a child. A child was like, he had all of this paper that he had been making edits to his script on.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I could tell he was obsessed. And I always liked that one part of it was like, yeah. Someone who is determined to make a movie will eventually make a movie. You know, like it might end up being The Room,
right?
And this is definitely better than The Room.
Oh my gosh, right? Yes, for sure.
Well, let's remember, Eli Roth was like 29 when he was actually directing this, so he would have been even younger than that, trying to get this thing together, getting it written.
No, I admire his motivation and his chutzpah. Like, well done, dude.
Incredibly young.
Worked your ass off and you got to a place you may not have ever really had it. Like, the Tommy Wiseau connection, Randy's a good one, because he's, in a way, it's like, you're not really good at this. Why are you even doing this? Well, because he's right. Passionate
it's a
about it.
Trajectory.
Yeah, and even The Room has obtained, it's not the right kind of fame, maybe, but it's attained a level of fame and then had a, you know, a major motion picture made about it with The Disaster Artist. Like, you did it. Like, you for did. Good or for ill, for respect or for not, you made the thing and it made you a career and you got somewhere with it. So, you know, there's something about that I admire. But at the end of the day, the end result work, though, is still a poo bag. It's not good. Mm-hmm. A Listerine penis aside. Yeah.
Right. I don't know. It's according to what part of the movie you're talking about good.
Was it a competently
filmed movie with decent edits?
That's what I'm looking for in my $14 ticket price, is a competently made film.
I'm definitely going to give that
to the Academy Award for most competent filmmaking.
Sorry, Randy, go ahead. You were saying.
Go ahead.
I just want to agree that, yes, someone who has practiced a lot and has learned and educated themselves a lot about how to use an editing suite and so on can make a film that looks like other films. Yes.
Right. I mean, yeah. Like, he knew how to make... There was a scene where there was a loud noise. I don't remember if it was a gun or what, but that made the two of the main characters turn around in slow motion.
Right.
It was like this moment of like, oh, it's on now. And I went, oh, that's a really cool effect and moment that you took from someone. I mean, I've seen it a trillion times in other movies, but here it is. So you've competently watched every grindhouse movie ever made, Eli Roth. And at the end of the day, you now have a full understanding of the subgenre, and you're going to make your own film. I mean, that's how this felt. This just felt like somebody who's a huge fan of this stuff, and he took from everything he'd ever seen before. A little Texas Chainsaw Massacre, a little bit of The Hills Have Eyes, a little bit of zombie in there, a little bit of, you know, kids in the woods with the teenagers and the sex and just all the tropes. And he said, I'm going to make one of these and it's going to be my movie. And he did it. And I guess, you know, I suppose that I have some respect for that. You know, you did the thing you wanted to do. But just my biggest problem is the central idea is just let everybody bleed to death. Just like they did with the girl in the shed. Like, you don't need to go on this rampage. And
the fact that you're moving people around, picking them up, carrying them places, you know, kids, I don't know. Kids would be smarter than that. It's giving them a lot of credit.
But saying that
they are smarter than that. Not in movies, I know, but in real life they are. They're smarter in real life.
It's like, you know what? We're probably better off just leaving her in that room. Yeah, let's close the door, but let's make sure she's comfortable. Bert, go drive the car, get help. cool. Problem right. solved.
But see, that's the point of a horror movie.
I know.
It's to be dumb.
Good decisions. You have to have something.
There's no decisions.
For.
Eli. Yeah. Okay. He did. He had Bert. I've told you, Bert's the only person who has a good plan. That's going to get him out of this.
And you know what? You know what? I want to say in Eli Roth's favor, he's not a bad actor.
No, he's like, okay. He's all right.
The way he plays this character in this thing, it feels a little amateurish, but he's not bad. He's not great. He's no Bert. But right, he's no Bert. Bad.
He's no Bert is the catchphrase of today's episode. He's you no know, Bert.
I've said this a lot of times on this podcast, and it's making movies is hard.
Yeah.
I think this movie fails in a lot of ways. Just like a lot of the things you guys said is absolutely right. This movie fails in a lot of ways, but does it provide any fun? I think in certain instances it did. Like I enjoyed, I don't think I've ever seen Robert Harris, who played the old man from Cats.
Oh yeah,
Grocer.
He's an interesting dude, isn't he?
Best thing in the movie is that General Smith.
Yeah. It really is. Right. Between the old man and Dennis. Those two things. Dennis, yeah. I was rooting for more than Bert.
Freaking Dennis.
Fight
him
again. Dennis.
Yelling pancakes or whatever it was. And
right. Some bizarre impromptu taekwondo moves.
Just, oh, my God. Know. I forgot about that. It's just, really, that really is like weird. The best. So that's the weird. Best, weirdest scene ever.
Yeah, just because he can. Like, okay.
Yeah. A lot of this movie.
Let me show you pancake style. Pancake.
Yeah. I mean, the movies like this that impress me the most are the ones that make me not think about the fact that the people in it are dumb. Like one of the big complaints against Prometheus was everybody's making like cheap horror movie decisions, and why would they do such stupid dumb things? And the best kind of directors can take a lot of dumb decisions and make it not feel that way. They make the situation feel so much pressure and so much intenseness that, well, of course they would choose that because they're faced with, you know, a worse choice or, you know, whatever. Like the best horror movies are like that, where I don't just constantly go, ugh, why would you do that, you dummy?
That is interesting. I've read some complaints about Prometheus, and I've never known this about myself, but Prometheus is I love that movie. Mm. I know so many people hate it.
We're talking about the alien, most recent alien movie. Okay.
No, not the most recent. Right, most recent was Covenant.
No. It's
Covenant. Right.
Not
okay,
Covenant. The one before,
right.
before that,
which is actually Prometheus 2 in some ways.
Yeah, it may as well be. But yeah, the first one, the Prometheus one, is a beautifully filmed. It's Ridley Scott, for heaven's sakes, returning to this thing. It's got some really cool ideas. It's just people making poor decisions constantly that are so obvious and so easy to avoid. That I feel like that's just lazy writing.
I don't think it's lazy writing. I think our expectations have changed over time, because if you go back and watch the first Alien, I'm not going to say Prometheus is as good as the first Alien or nothing crazy like that. Settle down.
Yeah.
Settle down.
Yeah.
But I will say that the people in the first, they probably were more intelligent, but they still made the same bad decisions. It was just this.
But there's a difference between making a bad decision that just feels completely like there's no way I would make that decision. But then there's also the decision of like, oh, you know what? I guess I could see in the heat of the moment, I'd have a couple different choices and I might, without thinking, do X.
Yeah. That's what I'm coming at. Yeah.
And unfortunately, there's just every decision made in this movie is... But all right, you're faced with two decisions. Right. No, definitely pick the worst one.
Yeah, and in the case of the original, Alien didn't have a lot of bad decisions. It just had a lot of bad circumstances because they'd never dealt with this before. It's a giant alien on the ship. Right. It showed up first out of the guts of John Hurt.
That might be the difference, because when you watch that, you had no expectations of what the eggs were, and the members and the on the team had no expectations. And so you were in alignment with their understanding.
Yeah,
however,
that's good.
With Prometheus, your understanding is, well, duh.
No, that's a really good point. Prequels are dangerous that way. I agree with that in a lot of ways. Like, I think it hurts everything from Star Wars to... There's been very few cases where I think it actually works, and it has to be smartly handled. But
you're right.
Hey, man, the two Star Wars story films are prequels.
And
while they get close to violating some of the rules, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they do. Like, in fact, I might argue they actually violate them. Like, there's a problem with that, and so I agree. I think there's two things happening here. In the first Alien movie, nobody knew what to do, so they're just kind of sneaking around a ship. Plus, you know, there's this isolation element to it where you're in dead space in a tiny ship, and there's nothing anywhere but dead cold space. And that makes for some really great tension. I love horror movies set in space. Space horror is probably my favorite subgenre of horror movies. Oh, yeah. For that reason, the cabin in the woods problem, or the cabin fever problem, is that, yeah, you're isolated, but you're not really. Like, you can get the hell out of there.
And but we removed our vehicle. We removed the phones. We removed common sense. What do you want?
Let's look at Bert's first decision for a second here. Not stealing the Snickers bar, but his first kind of bad decision that kind of spirals this whole situation. Out there shooting squirrels, sees what he thinks is a woodchuck, shoots it, happens to be a guy who's infected, bleeding, coming towards him. And he's smart to say, oh, no, don't come any further. I'm going to shoot the ground, scare you off. Makes the guy fall back in his hole.
Classic Bert.
Which was a moment I laughed. By the way, I watched this on a plane. Right. We'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, yeah, you watched this on a plane next to a stranger. We have to talk about that. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I was next to Tina, but Tina was next to a stranger.
Oh, okay.
But,
oh, my God.
Then he decides to go back to the cabin. For some reason, light a fire in a big circle of gasoline or lighter fluid around the campfire. And then not tell anybody that, oh, by the way, while I was in the woods, I encountered a bloody dude who was screaming at me to go get help. Doesn't even like mention it to them. Doesn't think about going and getting help. Nothing. And it seems like that is one of those situations where even in the heat of the moment, I can't imagine any person not even mentioning it to their friends. I can understand Bert's kind of a selfish ass and he's not going to go get help, but he's still going to say, oh, dude, you won't believe what I saw in the woods. There's this dude and he's all bloody and he came at me.
All heroes have their faults. It's the very essence of being a hero.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
We're going to make a case for Bert being the smartest person.
No. Smartest different. I don't think I said smartest. Well, maybe he's the smartest in the situation they're currently in.
Well, he was only a hair away from the other kid. What was his name? The blonde that had that ran
Jeff.
Off.
Oh, Jeff. Jim.
He's only a hair away from Jeff's level of wimpy runawayness. Right. Like the only difference is that he caught a disease before he tried to bail, and the other one didn't. And his demise. I mean, if we're talking about all these deaths, the most depressing kill is his, because he survived it. He didn't catch it. He lived through it. Why he circled back, I'll never understand. But him coming out of the front and then just getting shot because he's there is the most depressing death in the thing.
Did Jeff ever get sick? Because it seemed like that handkerchief that he kept putting over his mouth kind of prevented him from ever getting sick.
He never got sick.
He never did.
And because he abided by the rule of the early rule to drink only beer.
Yeah, that rule was established a little too loudly for
me. Right. Me too. I was like, gee, I wonder if that's going to come into play.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
I'll make you a bet that we can only drink beer. You're on.
Yeah.
Like sometimes the trope is subverted, right? Like, so when we first see the kid bite him at the convenience, it's like, oh, this is going to be a zombie movie. That guy just got infected. Well, no, actually, that's just a joke, basically.
Yeah.
But then later, when they're all about the beer, I'm all, okay, the water is going to be this vector of disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Yeah, and I guess the rest of the town is not subject to the same water.
But who else is getting water from that cesspool of a reservoir? What is that?
Those kids, right? They're taking their McDonald's thermos down there, and they're filling it up to make lemonade. So
only 5 cents for some lemonade.
I mean, the idea is that this is the first time that metastasized and became an actual viral drinking problem when they got to the thing. Okay, fine. But otherwise, the whole town should be sick by now.
No, that is the point. The hermit, the idea is that there's a disease that is rampant among the animals. It infected the dog and it infected the pigs. And it was moving its way up the food chain. When we have the hermit actually die in the reservoir, he contaminates the water, and that water, of course, has not made it to the townspeople yet.
I'll tell you what, that dog got me pretty good. I'll give him that. I didn't like every time they showed the view of the dog, which is that horrible red,
Dr. Mambo.
Yeah, Dr. Mambo with the weird red colored
name.
Yeah.
That got me.
He's a professor of being a dog.
Stop stealing the show, Eli Roth.
Now, is that guy, by the way, is that guy our chick in the bucket? Like,
oh, yeah, totally.
He's the guy who provides the pot to the kids?
No, he actually never leaves them the pot, and he is dead in the cave.
Yeah, they found him in the cave.
It's hard, hard to see, though, and I can imagine it'd be really difficult to see if you were on a plane.
Yeah,
it was so dark, and maybe that was the problem.
Yeah, he was in the cave, and then in the cave, they panned down his body, and it was like all guts from the waist down. And
I did see that, and I thought for a second that was Jeff, and then we see Jeff.
Yeah, we were supposed to think that was Jeff, and it ends up being. Marijuana Jesus.
Yeah, and Jeff's case, again, it's just so pathetic because he's just such a puss. He runs off. He's holding a piece of underwear at his face for the rest of the movie. Runs around, comes back, circles back for some reason. Like, I just go find town or get out. Just, what are you doing coming back to the damn cabin? Oh, my gosh, you idiot kid. I just want to kick him in the nuts super hard.
Perfect. And then Eli Roth played that well.
Did he though? Because I hate these people as much as I do? Maybe yes. That was his point.
I never pull for there's usually only one person you pull for in a horror movie. There's generally only one person that you pledge your allegiance to in a horror movie, Bert. And Jeff was not it. You do not pledge your allegiance to Jeff. It is the wrong bet, and you want to hate him.
Yeah, the ones that have sex, you never bet on. It's the one. Right. It's the one who doesn't have sex.
And
maybe
Bert
Brian's
never
right.
had sex. You'll notice Bert was the only person.
Well, he did have his dog lick his bumhole or whatever he said.
Well, that was just a story. He's trying to impress his cool friends.
Oh yeah, really impressive story. Telling this, oh my gosh, I hated that story so bad. Also, when Bert takes off his hat, his baseball hat. Which I think is part of being Bert. You can't take that off. Absolutely. When he took it off, I thought it was a different character. Like they went into that house of people weren't there or whatever. They were scoping out, and he pops up and does one of those jump scares, and it's Bert. But at first, I was like, "No wait, is that Bert? Because that's a guy with like feathered hair. Who is this guy?"
Bert comes from a broken family. They have no food of their own, so he has to steal, Snickers bars for the nougat. And when he goes in somebody's house, he's gonna eat your chips.
He's gonna eat your jerky. Yeah.
That's not jerk. That's just Bert.
I thought I said he ate their jerky. Didn't he eat their jerky?
Oh, yeah, he ate the jerky. I'm sorry. I called him a jerk. I'm sorry. I guess that technically does make him a jerk if you're eating someone's jerky.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. But I love that you're so defensive of Bert that you thought I was calling him a jerk when really I was talking about the jerky he stole.
No, I want to hear about Ibbot's experience as watching some. Movie is a little bit. It's not terribly. Offensive to the eyes most times, but it's pretty offensive if you're sitting next to somebody you don't really know.
So here's the setup. Basically, I had to fly back from Boston yesterday. I was out there, lots of driving, lots of time with the family, so I knew that if I was going to watch this movie, it was going to have to be on the plane, because we had a 4-hour flight from Boston to Denver, perfect amount of time to watch a film. And I could put on headphones and watch and not worry about it. We had the next to last row of the airplane, which is, you don't have a lot of people sitting behind you, especially if you're in an aisle seat like I was, who can sit there and watch. Plus, we lowered both tray tables, Tina's and mine. Tina had the middle seat next to me, lowered both tray tables and straddled the iPad between the two seats. I actually paid money to rent Cabin Fever for 48 hours.
Wow.
I know. I thought about saying, hey, could somebody really rip me a copy? Because this was sent to us by a listener, right?
No, this is on Netflix. You could have downloaded it before you left, right?
Well, he just didn't know.
I don't know if it was one of the Netflix downloadable movies. Hmm. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not.
Yeah.
A lot of the originals are, or all the originals are, but...
I'll reimburse your $2.99.
Oh, gosh, don't. You certainly don't have to do that. And then to our right, we had a much older lady who, I think was asleep for much of it, but in any case, she was turned to be facing the window, which she left open while she was sleeping.
Nice bright light right in your face while you're sleeping. That's perfect.
Which is probably why I didn't recognize Marijuana Jesus as the
right
But for the most part, it was, you know, pretty tame. And Tina and I are just kind of chuckling that the drink cart is going to come right as the kids are having sex. And sure enough, it's like I had to find a place to freeze frame the movie, like back up a half a scene and freeze frame the movie while we got our we ordered our drinks, so that
I don't want to get like graphic about stuff, but you know, we're all adults here. I'm just gonna say those scenes were unconvincing because I don't think anybody was putting the parts in the right place. It's just a thing I'm gonna put out there.
It was horrible.
Yeah. Either time, by the way. Either time.
It's not, again, comparing it to The Room. It's not like Tommy Wiseau humping Lisa's belly button. But
that's great. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I always forget about that horrible thing.
Like, what's he doing so high up her body? What's going on?
I mean, we're just talking standard ass anatomy here. There's some stuff wrong with that.
Exactly.
And this one felt a bit like that. But you didn't feel like, you know, was it hard to watch it when you were in the plane? Or, I mean, was it? Like,
I do always feel uncomfortable if there is a sex scene in a movie that I'm watching on a plane. There's no way you can't. And the only other time I really remember this happening was watching American Pie for the first time.
Oh, wow.
On a plane, and is like, oh, okay. And I actually did use my packet of peanuts to cover up both Thora Birch and
it's going to use these nuts to cover up
Una Savari. Yeah, exactly.
Wow. All right.
Had a packet of pretzels at the ready. Didn't feel like any of those. So there's such brief nudity scenes, and it's like, all right, well, whatever.
Yeah. But you just don't want somebody, like, all they see is all you've seen is that scene, and they just think you're watching porn.
Like, thinking that looking over, the only time they look over is seeing that moment. Yeah. I know that's not true. Like, somebody's going to look over and say, oh, that guy's watching a movie, and they'll probably see the opening credits.
Yeah.
Or heck, they might watch somebody, like, go through an entire movie, fast forwarding and scanning like Scott did
weeks ago. Exactly. So if you just don't want to end up on the front page of Reddit the next day going, man on United flight watching porn the whole time.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, you didn't have any concerns with this film. The sex scenes were short, the nudity was weird angles,
uncomfortable.
This was not porn at all.
No. This was their attempt. Well, if you go back and watch the Friday the 13th or any of that, it's all like this. It's just cheap throwaway titillating for maybe a 14-year-old will see it and go, oh, yeah, like there's sex going on.
Oh, yeah, see, I'm 14, see?
Yeah, see?
I like boobs.
Yeah. But then, I don't know why I did that voice, but yeah. it's just to me, the sum of its parts don't ever equal to anything great. There are a couple of discordant moments that I appreciate. I think, again, toward the end when everyone's playing weird Southern jugs and strange instruments and having, you know, kids running around and stuff is kind of a fun way to end things. I never felt like the N-word joke paid off because I don't think it was worth it the old guy and the gun that he was holding for the N-words. You know, supposed to be, oh, he's racist, he's gonna shoot him, and then they show up and no, he's just holding the gun and cleaned it for him, and
yeah,
and that's just what he calls his buddies, and now it's
exactly. You don't that's not a word you just throw around. You know, if he's so hip and with it that you know, we want him to think, all right, he's cool, he refers to these guys with the N-word when they're there in the shop, and he cleaned the gun for him.
Yeah, and they reciprocate and all that, and that's fine.
He's smart enough to know not to use that term in mixed company.
But also, that's just Eli Roth doing a dad joke that was just inappropriate at dinner. Like, that's all that is. That's like Thanksgiving, and your uncle told that joke. And you're like, oh, dude, Uncle Joel, please. I say that because I have an Uncle Joel who tells racist jokes. But it's just like, dude, stop. And this is the same uncle, by the way, that if I ever told you guys about the uncle I have that through his entire house, it didn't matter what room you were in, there was a stash of vintage Penthouse magazines in there. So
every room.
Yeah, every room. So the bathrooms had them stacked underneath the counter or under the cupboard there. If you went into his office, there were shelves of it. If you went to the living room, back behind the couch would be a stack of them neatly stacked in a row. It was the weirdest thing to go to his
house. Garage, you're going to go for a car ride. You got a little selection before you get in the car.
Yeah, everywhere you went. And I swear, I'm pretty sure he thinks he was just collecting, or he was some high-minded, you know, hippie guy that was just like, you know, storing the great history of Penthouse magazine. keeping the Guccione legacy alive or whatever. But right. I'd go over there at like 12 going, how are we allowed to be here at all? Like, you can feel the porn. You can feel it as it's everywhere around you. Just old 70s, like, you know, what do they use, a Vaseline filter 70s looking.
Oh, yes, right.
Like,
right.
Everywhere you
Bob
went.
Guccione.
I'm like, Mom, this isn't a Christmas day. And this is, we should be somewhere that isn't this. This shouldn't be it.
Right. It was a lot more acceptable it was a lot more acceptable then. I remember going to people's houses.
Yeah, but this was in the late 80s. This was like when I was, everybody's a kid. Everyone's in their, either they're, you know, everyone's like 8 to 15 or something.
Right.
I don't think that's normal, having penthouse everywhere.
Absolutely not. No, I didn't say it was normal. I just said it was more acceptable.
I don't know if it was more acceptable. I think it was always weird. But anyway, yeah, whatever.
Our CEO, back when the newspaper software company that I worked for had its origins in a garage, a modified garage that was turned into a bunch of cubicles and heated and lit and stuff like that. But the CEO still lived in the house. Mm. And there was one bathroom that they put in the garage that seven of us would share. But if we had to go into the house to use the bathroom, which was totally fine, then you went by our CEO's office, and right next to it was the bathroom that he used. And it had a massive stack of Playboys and penthouses right next to the toilet, which again is like maybe two on the nose. I don't know.
Well,
but so it was always eerie because, you know, we had women who worked there too who had to use that bathroom, and they would just kind of shrug it off like, okay, there you go. We got to go to Porny House.
Porny House.
You got to go to Porny House.
Yeah, that's what Uncle Joel's like. He's still around, still kicking it, still has a giant ponytail, probably still collects it.
That's just proof that porn makes you live longer.
All right. Well, now I understand.
Am I putting those together? I think
you've mashed
those together.
And
Bert was the hero. Yeah. This is the reality I live in.
Bert's the hero. Bert. He's the zero. Bert. I found one piece of trivia that I thought was interesting because the rest of it was dumb. And it's this. Peter Jackson stopped production on Lord of the Rings, Return of the King in 2003. Three times he stops production, according to this. Now, I don't have any proof of this. It's IMDb. To screen this movie for his entire crew that were working on Lord of the Rings, Jackson was so enthusiastic about the film, he gave director Eli Roth publicity quotes so that he could put it on the box and otherwise use them for his promotion of the film. That may be true. If we remember, you know, Peter Jackson's roots are very much in schlock horror. Dead Alive. Is it Dead Alive? Dead Alive, I think, is the movie I'm thinking of. Anyway, there's one where somebody gets their face run over with a lawnmower, and I'll never forget it. It was like the most shocking thing I'd ever seen. It was a Peter Jackson movie. So yeah.
Dead Alive, correct.
Is it Dead Alive? Yeah. That is a weird, oh my
and
gosh.
We watched The Frighteners, right?
Yeah, we saw Frighteners with Marty McFly in it. Yeah, that was good. I actually really liked that.
Great movie. Mm-hmm.
And then he did some other really gnarly stuff back then, but I guess I could see this, but it seems like, I don't know, if you're doing your multi-million dollar production of Lord of the Rings, you can just stop everything for this Eli Roth kid's freaking college movie, or it wasn't a college movie, but you know what I mean?
I read that, and my response was, really?
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. Really?
Something about it doesn't... I need a citation here is what I need.
Right.
And they don't get one.
Yeah, no, that first part of that trivia is nonsense.
Yeah. The rest of it where it says, Bert is the worst thing in the movie, I agree with some of that.
Trivia.
I agree with those pieces of trivia. All right. We are going to do some clips now. Let's do them. This is for the film that we've just been talking about. Cabin Fever. And we'll start with something about a cat and having your tongue. This is to deal with the pancake kid. Here you go. Whoops. Here you go.
Put her there, sport. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue?
And then he bites him. But that kid wasn't rabid yet, right? Like the kid seemed to know when he bit.
The kid was never rabid.
Yeah, and when he bit,
not until he bit Bert later.
He may have drank the lemonade.
Yeah, but
He bit Bert later on. That's what put him in the hospital. You actually see, him in the hospital at the end. That's
with the rabbit
getting pancakes,
getting pancakes
from the big rabbit, the guy in the rabbit suit. Also, what was that? Jeez.
Yeah, I don't know.
What the hell was going on there? All right, so
I forgot about the cold open. I was just reminded about the cold open, too. Yeah. Dude with the dead dog walking over and trying to give a dead stiff rabbit to his dog.
Yeah.
Right. And he's like, hey, come on, get up, buddy, get up.
Yeah, dog's definitely dead. Like, it was so obvious he was dead, it was killing me. But he was all fevered up, I guess, or whatever. All right, Cat got your... No, I did that one. How about this one? Yeah, this is good.
Everybody knows not to sit next to Dennis.
Yeah, it's always...
Everybody knows that. Come on.
Everybody knows that. Come on.
Dennis. Didn't he also call her a she at one point, and then it was back to being Dennis? A he? Threw me in the movie. I don't know.
I don't know. There's a thing about...
He still has some pretty hair.
Right. He has beautiful hair. There's a thing about horror movies that always makes me laugh. There's a lot of exclaiming of people like going kid and I don't know, mister. You hear mister in horror. I never hear anybody say, hey, mister in real life, but in horror movies all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, mister.
Hey, mister.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, kid.
Yeah.
Hey, old man.
It all sounds right to me. Here's some awful dialogue, 14 seconds of it. This is also why I think this movie's bad. Here you go.
Hey, pal, do you think it's a smart idea leaving your kid out here where he might be a danger to people?
Just what are you saying exactly?
Well, I'm just saying if such an incident were to bring about a lawsuit, you might be held liable.
Okay. All right, Jack.
Hey, pal! Like,
didn't notice that stupid music first time around. Yeah. But boy, oh boy, is that stupid music.
This is like, oh, hey, we're among the lawyers. Let's go full, what's that movie?
Deliverance.
Deliverance. Yeah. Let's go full Deliverance because we're around the weird locals. They're all inbreds.
Let's just replace the banjo with some taekwondo.
Yeah. All right. Here you go. What's this?
So I took her in the back and gave her some coke and some ammonia. I thought she was going to have a spell.
All right, that guy's great.
I love his voice. Yeah. Fable Wall War.
Yeah, he just died a couple of years ago. Yeah. 80-something.
I was glad that that was a real, like a solid casting. Like they found a local actor who, honestly, Brian Dunaway, you're going to sound like that in about 20. But seriously, like that is
Shirley Temple glasses.
only if possible. Yes, please.
I love that. It won't be 20 though, Randy. It'll be like 10.
Right, like next week.
Right.
You guys keep it up. We'll see.
He sounds exactly like my grandmother, my long deceased grandmother. That is her voice. Aww, exactly. Like,
I love play it that. Again. I love listening. That. Yeah, let's play it again.
Yeah, my mom. So I took her in the back and gave her some coke and some ammonia. I thought she was going to have a spell.
That is so Southern grandma. Yeah. Also, well, whatever. Here's one about fox pee.
Yeah, my mom would love fox piss.
Oh, Lord.
No, Lord. We'll have foxes from all over.
Yeah. Don't spill that fox pee.
I looked up what this guy did. It was mostly a lot of local theater stuff. Like Randy says, probably a local actor. Didn't do much else.
I played Willie Loman in Diary.
Here's, let's see, what's, I don't know. This, oh, I won't. I wrote, that's for what now?
What's the rifle for?
Oh, that's been.
Yeah, I couldn't. I had to beep it. I can't even do that without
you can't do it.
Yeah, right. this was the best example of Eli Roth trying to do something, and I don't know what. That's the thing. It's like it feels dumb, like a dumb attempt at controversy or something, and I just don't get it.
Yeah, right. There's no stakes. Right. There's no, I don't know, just feels
And it's not even, lazy. You got to at least give, you got to give people the thread of the potential joke so that when they look back, they can say, oh, okay, he did kind of say it that way. Like, instead of saying, that's for...
right.
He says it as, oh, you know, there's got to be some thread of like, oh, potentially when you listen back, you're like, oh, okay, I guess he kind of meant he was going to give that to the African-American people who are going to be showing up that he was holding
right.
it for.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, yeah. Here's your boy, Bert. I zoomed out the window there. Freaking hate him so much. All right, here's Eli Roth doing his dumb dialogue. The thing I called this clip, I hate Eli Roth dialogue. That's the name of the clip. So,
all right.
So 10 seconds, here you go.
Why would you want to kill squirrels?
Because they're gay.
Oh, this isn't the one.
Yeah.
I did them backwards. It's okay, but this is also dumb.
Why would you want to kill squirrels?
Because they're gay.
Bert, don't be a fucking retard.
Kidding. I don't care if they're gay or straight. I'll kill them either way.
Will you be careful with that thing?
Duh, I hate that stuff. Wow. It's so cheap.
What's sad is it doesn't sound improvised. It sounds over-rehearsed and like it's been on script for years.
Yeah, burned into those pages, dude. That's what I think. There's no way that stuff's improv. Here's some more bad dialogue. This might be the one with Eli Roth.
Yo, dipshit, what the f***, man? Where were you? You burned the whole f***ing place down?
What are you
Smokey the Clown now?
Don't you mean Smokey the Bear?
Whatever, this is f***ing horseshit, man. It's f***ing fireplace.
How f***ing old are you? Can't you be responsible for anything? Goddamn, we can't leave you alone for 5 f***ing minutes without you destroying something.
Oh, come on.
What are you shooting at?
I heard a squirrel or something. I was just looking for a squirrel.
Gosh dang it. They're so bad.
poor Bert.
Oh, they're so bad.
Poor Bert. So
bad. Poor Bert.
Misunderstood.
Yeah. Misunderstood. Is, you know, he's not smart like the other kids. The other ones are lawyers and stuff, and he's just trying to make it through college. Yeah.
Oh, you know what it was? I wrote, I hate Eli Roth dialogue. It wasn't that he was saying it. It's that he wrote it. That's what I meant there. Okay. Yes, now exactly. It makes sense. Looking for squirrels.
I was just looking for a squirrel.
Okay, great. How about this one? Here's Eli Roth showing up.
Is your dog friendly?
Yeah, yeah. He's cool. This is Dr. Mambo.
Dr. Mambo. He's cool. I'm cool. I'm cool.
Yeah.
But have you ever walked up upon a group of teenagers and just started blurting out, I'm cool. I'm cool.
Never.
That's not.
Right. Never.
Yeah.
I don't feel like those.
If you're really cool, you would have brought the pot. You wouldn't have to go back to your tent to go
right,
get it.
Exactly.
Right.
Who would leave it? You're out camping and right. You have one really valuable possession and you just leave it in the tent. Go wandering.
No. Didn't Bert have pot? Why didn't Bert just do pot and they just tell Eli Roth to pound sand? Oh, it smokes.
Yeah.
And he's poor. He doesn't have a lot of smokes.
That crew's right. All about the beers, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Arrogant Bastard, which is a great microbrew.
Oh, yeah. There you go, then. Yeah,
made with water from far away that's not infected.
I want to say that's from Colorado, Arrogant Bastard. I was going to look it up.
Oh. Well, that's pretty cool. A local favorite. Here's Professor of Being a Dog.
Yeah, he's a professor. Of being a dog? Oof. Faced.
Thank you, Pauly Shore.
When we grew up, though, it was face, not faced. Right? There was no faced, like you've been faced.
Like you've just got faced.
Yeah, no, it was like, oh, dude, face is what you'd say. Like you've got, you got
burns. Short for in your face.
Yeah, in your face or face.
Can we hear that again? Does he say faced or face?
He says faced with an ED. Here you go. Okay. Whoops, that's not it. Sorry. Here's the real one.
Yeah, he's a professor. Of being a dog. Ooh, faced.
See, faced.
Yeah, very much pronounces the face. By the way, Arrogant Bastard made by the Stone Brewing Company in Escondido, California.
Oh.
Right down the road from here. Good old Stone.
Yeah, what water
used
that...
Used to be great, but no, now they're just...
They're sold out. California. The water's okay if you can find it. That's the thing.
Well, Urban Dictionary
supports that.
Ooh, California, all our water faced.
Right. We're turning all of our water into booze. One way.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Nobody will get sick on it. All right, here's my least favorite sound in the movie and the grossest thing I could find. That's just gross, dude.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Don't like it. Here's another line.
We lit him on fire.
Yes, we did. We did that. This one's called Like You Do.
Ah!
Okay, I have questions about that scene.
I love it. That was my favorite.
Why was he doing that? What was that?
Oh, he is hearing what he assumes. This is Paul out in the woods.
Yeah.
He's hearing what he assumes is an animal, and so he's aying to try to scare it away, but a weird... I never go, I might go, I usually go, hey,
yeah, who is it?
Or you shout the name of one of your friends just in case it's them.
Yeah, right? Jeff. Right. Instead he goes,
I'm a bird.
I hate it so much. All right, here's a good a-hole.
Asshole!
That's a pretty good a-hole.
Boom, boom,
that
boom,
is,
boom.
That's a great take.
Yeah, she did good there. I thought that was all right. Here's
an interesting bit of trivia. Nobody ever dies from the disease, by the way. They're all killed by other means, like a shovel to the face or...
Wait a minute. The blonde, he ended her there. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She got her face. Yeah.
That was
got her face ate off.
By the dog.
I said, faced!
I think you could have done a more merciful style of killing with her, probably.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know.
They had history.
So, the movie definitely leaves you with the impression that even more people are about to die and from the disease.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. No, I assume that whole town's about to go under from what I saw there.
Town. There's no town. Faced.
Or whatever
there's
they are.
There's no town.
They're motley group of like 12 people. Here's the scary dog sound. It still scares me to hear it. Oof, gosh dang it. Scary dogs are scary. Here's this was kind of funny.
The guy with the
harmonica jammed in his neck.
Yeah, he got that shoved down his throat by his friend who hit him with a guitar. Also, people you wanted to die.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't want anyone to live except old guy who ran the store. And even then, I was pissed about his dumb joke with the black people.
Yeah, no, you want him to die, too, because he collects glass jars or something?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
That was weird. No,
Shirley Temple.
Oh, God.
Because he's a racist.
Yeah.
He's like the Ken Kratz of the South. By the way, Ibbett, I should mention, I watched, and I did it for Recommendals this week while you were gone. Yes, you may have heard it, but I did the second season of that Making a Murderer deal. Boy, Ken Kratz is a capital butthole, man.
Awesome. Do we get more Ken Kratz?
Oh,
I know we
lots
get the new
more.
Lawyer lady, but okay,
lots
cool.
Lots more. So you're going to get your impression polished up when you watch that.
Yay!
Yeah, it's really something else. That guy is the worst butthole ever. All right, that's this was a final clip. This is the only other symptom that you get in this thing. Okay, so if you catch the disease, you get this.
Pissed blood.
All right, that's it.
Well done.
There you go.
A lot of use for that.
I wasn't expecting.
I guess we don't get any audio of flailing deer legs through the window.
No, there wasn't much to record there, but it was pretty funny visually.
Yes,
that poor deer. Oh my gosh, that didn't go well.
That was that's just trying to escalate until you're like, really?
Yeah, right. It's a little over the top. I will say, I still stand by this. At the end of the movie, I had kind of a, oh wow, this ending.
Right.
I don't
know
what it was. Some of the ending kind of got me. You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the ending of the first Night of the Living Dead. Sort of that weird. Right. Here's a bunch of shots of people in the aftermath. There's something about that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give Eli Roth too much credit. It may have been just random, but.
But it does make you long for a movie, and somebody could do this, and it would be such a great movie, to do a Friday the 13th more from the Jason Voorhees perspective, where you're killing people sort of accidentally or by self-defense or things like that, but all the people around think it's because you're a horrible slasher, slasher.
Did you ever see the later of the Texas Chainsaw Massacres?
No.
Yeah, that's actually what you kind of get to the point where you're like, oh, well, poor Leatherface.
Mm. Oh, awesome. Okay, that's what I want to see then.
Yeah, I think it was the
2003.
I have it in 3D. I'm trying to remember which one.
Is that
it was.
The one with Kate, not Kate Beckinsale?
Was it 2003?
Who's Justin Bieber's wife? What's her name? Very pretty. Can't think of her name. She's in one
Selena
of those.
Selena Gomez?
No.
Not Selena Gomez.
No. Gosh dang it.
No.
She's kind of taller and buffer and cool. No.
2013 is the one I was thinking about, by the way.
Oh, Justin Timberlake. Jessica Biel. I'm sorry. I thought you said Justin Bieber.
Oh, yeah, no.
I thought I did, too. That's what I was trying to figure out. I'm like, Justin Bieber's married? Who's
he? Yeah, no. You guys just really like Justin Bieber, so he heard Justin.
He's married to that sandwich.
Yeah.
I'm still concerned about that burrito.
That burrito, that's what it is. Not
that, he's married to that burrito that he's eating from the middle on out. What is up with that kid?
If you want to see a horror, character turn into kind of the hero, then check out the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3D from 2013. I thought that, I kind of enjoyed that one a little bit.
Did you like that one? Okay. I'm not opposed to these, like the Friday the 13th remake thing they did that was just like a throwback to the original. I really liked it. Like, I thought that was great. Really well done. And I don't know why. Like, it probably wasn't, but I think I liked it. Anyway, that was like 2010 or 12 or 11 or something. Mm. Something like that. That's a good little slasher movie. We should watch that sometime.
Slasher.
They just get right back to basics. It's like teenagers, cabin, Jason, machete, go.
Right. Go do it.
We know the formula.
Yeah.
We're sticking to it.
Yeah, we're just gonna go all in on it. All right, time for this. Why, it's the film sack checklist. Stupid, check. Dumb, check. Makes you wonder why Roth gets directing work? Check. Triple check. Star Trek Connection, we have exactly one. Tommy J. Huff. He was in the truck stunts. Trying to think what that means. Like probably the running. Oh, like into
when
stuff.
Later on when there was the trucks were chasing each other.
Yeah.
And, there was a good bit of that.
Right. Forgot about that. Yeah. He performed stunts in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, where he doubled for DeForest Kelly, and in Star Trek, The Undiscovered Country, also doubled for DeForest Kelly. Thank you, Daryl, for that. Those are your Trek connections.
So if you saw DeForest Kelly in this movie, you know why.
Yeah. Soundtrack great. I give it a W for whatever. Probably O for obvious, because Randy's right. Yeah. Earlier in the show, you mentioned that it was just such, like... Yeah. Here's the when you're in town, and here's the, you know, exact same thing or the exact right tropey music you'd use for the attack or whatever. It was just like paint by the numbers stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was fine, but whatever.
I was imagining them using completely different music, and I was trying to figure out where I would pull. And the answer is the TV show Justified. I would go and just steal that and rescore this movie.
Sure,
why not? Stole everything else.
I miss that show so much.
Well, stole everything 8 years in advance.
Right.
Raylan. Oh, I miss that show.
Oh, can you imagine if this movie had ended with Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins showing up to figure out what's
just to fix the whole movie? That would be right. That would fix it.
Oh, quit trying to make this a good movie.
I know it's not actually possible. So instead, we'll do this. We have alternate. Oh, no, we didn't do the Twitter post first. What am I thinking? I'm skipping ahead here. Hey, we got to sum it up in 280 characters or less. And I got to stick to the tradition here. Randy starts. Randy, what do you got?
Cabin Fever, a cheap, badly planned, scary gathering of young, horny, tragically dumb people who have no business trying to do anything. And that was just the initial producers.
Well done. Also, Brian Dunaway.
Cabin Fever, like a movie, you're pretty sure that the entire cast was paid in pot and bottled water. Faced.
Yeah, faced. Boy, you got faced.
He had Eli Roth had the whole budget right there in his hand when he walked up.
That was the entire thing.
Look here, fellas.
Yeah, it grossed $66 million. It cost a bag of weed.
Bag of weed.
Brian Ibbett.
Cabin Fever. Thus ends the great debate of pancakes versus waffles.
Yeah, pancakes. Waffles. Right, waffles is the answer. No more pancakes.
I don't ever want either, ever again.
I don't want anything.
Man, my dang old kid come up to me in the morning time when a pancake started doing all kinds of taekwondo, I'd be like,
You just
would put
full,
my hand out for him to bite.
You just
right,
went,
bite
you
it.
Went, you went
bite
full Boomhauer there on that.
I could go Boomhauer, but I figured I better not.
He said dang old. That made me
dang,
think of
old dang old anyway.
That's pretty good.
Been calling you guys better on a week now.
That's right. Here's this. All right, truly the alternate titles. Garbage in the Woods or Cabin Full of Dudes. There you go.
It was at the end. It was nothing but dudes.
It was
dudes
all
in it.
Dudes. Hey, a couple of quick things. Before I get to an email, I want to give some credit and some love out to a couple of listeners who sent us movies to SAC. And we'll get to them. I got to send them off to you guys, but they just showed up at the P.O. box. Baloney Ninja sent Crystal Skull DVDs.
My dreams are answered.
Yeah, we're going to have to watch Crystal Skull, I think. And then Adrian J., he sent Mac and Me DVDs.
Oh, man, oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Oh, so, looking forward to that.
Big thanks to Baloney Ninja and Adrian for thinking of us.
Good
and,
day for me.
We will,
good day for bad movies.
We'll put them in the pile of things we'll get to at some point or another. But thank you very much. That was very generous of you. We've got an email that came to us at filmsack@gmail.com. This came to us from Sony, not the record.
The Sony?
Not the PlayStation people. It's probably pronounced Sunny, but it's not double N, so that's why it's it just says Sony. But anyway, dear awesome Film Sack crew, I saw that Robin Hood starring Kevin Costner was on Netflix and decided to watch, surely assuming you fine men have certainly sacked this movie before. I was so sure that I listened to you guys sack this one, but after searching, there's no trace of this movie in your backlogs. I can't believe you guys have not done this yet. It needs to be done. Love the show and don't think I can live without it.
If that movie was made by Sony, that would be perfect.
It would be, wouldn't it? His
if
final
they
line.
Were actually.
Yeah, I completely agree. Final line, he says, I'm not sure what I'm going to do once y'all die or retire.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't know either.
Let's not get too hasty there, Sonny. Sonny. whatever your name is.
Fortunately, when we die or retire, we won't have to worry about what we're going to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about me retiring. I stretch every day.
Yeah.
So, again, we're talking about Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, that's the one with the Bryan Adams song and stuff. Yeah.
Everything I do it for you.
And it's got Snape as the Sheriff of Nottingham.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm all in.
There's several different accents, all done by Kevin Costner throughout the film.
The great Kevin Costner. The Fishman of Waterworld. Hey, this who else is in there? Morgan Freeman in there plays I don't know who, Friar Tuck maybe or something.
I say how many times I've seen this movie back in the day? But it's been like 20 years since I probably watched it last. I mean, I watched it so many times.
We
so
should absolutely. I think we maybe even had it on the list before, and then one of these poll deals happen. So I have no problem even pushing that one up if we want to get to it. Totally. we'll talk about that.
And I just double confirmed this was a Warner Brothers film, not a Sony film, and this is not some crazy 30 years later.
Some executive at Sony going, "Hey, my favorite movie that Warner Brothers ever did was Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves." Anyway, emails come to us at filmsack@gmail.com. We want to thank Sony/Sunny for sending that one in. Our next film will be
Young Guns.
Yeah.
I'll be your Huckleberry.
Remember, this is Happy Halloween. We always take a little break after Halloween, but we'll be back with Young Guns. That's right.
That's
right.
What'd you say at the end? You said something at the end there.
That movie.
Oh. Hey, it's perfect timing because Red Dead Redemption 2 is out. I've been playing that.
Exactly.
I got a little cowboy on the mind right now.
So. The reason that it's up. Like, you're going to spend the next few days playing Red Dead Redemption 2, and you're going to shoot things. You're going to ride a horse like you're in Grand Theft Auto on a horse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My memory of that movie is that Charlie Sheen died on a toilet. Do I have that right?
Absolutely.
Spoiler alert.
No, what you're confused about with is, right?
It might be Young Guns 2 I'm thinking of.
It might be really confusing with real life.
That's what I was going to say. I think you're confusing it with that Time Life book that came out.
Oh, okay.
Where they always talked about that kind of stuff.
It's where Tyrion killed Tywin in the...
That's right. That's it.
In the Lord of the... the Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Game of the Thrones.
Game of the Thrones. Yeah. The Lord of the Thrones.
Slowly Scott's descent into madness.
No, that's what you do. You take Lord of the Rings and you take Game of Thrones, and any mixing of those titles, that's how you come up with bad mobile game knockoffs. So, Lord of the Thrones is a great mobile game that you'll see advertised on like Instagram or something, or Game of the Lords or something like that.
Game of the Lords.
It's a fun game. You should play it at home. Filmsack.com is our website, and you should go there. Filmsack on Twitter is also a thing you should follow, because that's, I don't know, we say things there, and it's a good place to hang out and talk to us. You can also express your feelings and thoughts there as well. I need to open DMs on that account so people can just send us messages.
Yikes.
Great.
That'd be all right. Randy has access to that too, so he and I can both just wallow in the DMs. We can slide into our own DMs. Mm.
Scott and me DMing each other as the same account.
It's the same account. It's a great idea.
This is Bert level disturbing.
I know, it kind of is. Long live Bert. Filmsack.com is our website, and you can find everything you need there. And if you are in Anaheim, California for BlizzCon, please come and say hello to me and to Ibbot and to Randy if you see us. Randy will be very busy working there. But
I'm easy to find.
He is easy to find.
In the middle of the Dark Moon Fair.
That's right. And we'll be there a lot. And there's a good chance you'll just see us around. So make sure you say hi, say howdy, and get a sticker. I have stickers. So come ask me for a sticker, and I'll give you a sticker next week. That's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back a week after next. So a little break for the trip, and then we'll all be back with Young Guns. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Squirrel.
We'll see you next time. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.